Hey everybody, listen, before we get into this episode, I just want to kind of put a quick plug of what's going on. So typically with our Previously on Lost episodes, we will usually record about two in advance, just in case something happens. Well, earlier this year, we knew some things were coming down the pipe, and this fall, for one thing, one of our hosts, myself, we're going to be extending the family just a little bit, so I'm just going to be out of commission for the rest of the year after October. So there's that, and then another one of our hosts Corey gets an awesome opportunity to be an assistant director on an independent film, so he's going to be out of commission for about a month and a half to 2 months. So we went ahead and recorded a bunch of episodes to get us into December. We were going to record a couple more to hopefully get us through, but we weren't able to do that because the shooting for the movie got pushed up a little bit, which is an awesome opportunity for him. So what we're going to do is, after this week's episode, you're going to start seeing episodes come out every 3 weeks rather than every 2 weeks, just to kind of give us the buffer we need to get us through the end of the year. So we hope you enjoy them. We miss you. We look forward to seeing you back again in next year in 2022 as we continue on with the season 3 journey through Previously on Lost. Retro.
Lost fans, and welcome to the episode you have all been waiting for. This is episode number 58, and we're going to be talking about the best episode of Lost. Trisha Tanaka is dead. I am Mike, and over there I have the redneck man, Corey. How are you?
Hey. Well, hello. I'm great. How did you know?
You're doing better than most people deserve, or I deserve to, probably. Oh, and hey, over there, somebody who is still mourning the loss of Roger Workman. Steven, how are you?
I am doing all right. Just cracking one open here, in memory of Roger Workman.
He just made the psh sound with his mouth. That's good. Flat. It stinks.
Very flat.
But it's beer. Oh, Sawyer. Listen, I am so excited to talk about this episode. I cannot wait. And before we do that, let's go ahead and go through all the spills so we can get into this episode. You can find all of our social media at RetroZapped, at Lost Rewatch Pod on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram, Previously on Lost Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/Previously on Lost. You can find me on Twitter at the DC Mike. Steven, where can our fine people find you?
I am at Lucky13Steve on Twitter.
And the Top Gun man himself, Corey, where can we find you?
You guys can find me at Original Mav.
All right, and you can go to RetroZap.com. It has so many different things that talk about our network and articles and other podcasts, so give that a check out. All right, any other announcements, guys, before we move into Trisha Tanaka is dead? Good, didn't think so. Here we go. This is Season 3, Episode 10, came out February 20, 2007. It was directed by Eric Lanneville. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. Kate and Sawyer finally return to the castaways' camp. Hurley recalls the day his father left his mother and him in his motorcycle. Then he recalls his curse and his bad luck, inclusive after the winning the lottery, including the day that reporter Trisha Tanaka died and Mr. Cluck was destroyed by a meteor when his father returned home. Back in the present, Hurley finds a cap-sized combi Volkswagen van in the jungle, which used to be operated by the Dharma Initiative. And with the support of Sawyer, Jin, and Charlie, he tries to fix the car with the hope to make it run again. Meanwhile, Kate decides to bring Jack back by convincing Danielle Russo to help her, and Saeed and Locke follow her and join the team.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I have some episode facts for us here. A lot of Sawyer stuff going on in this episode, which is great. So one of Sawyer's nicknames is in this episode is Oliver Twist for Charlie. As a schoolboy, Dominic Monaghan first got his start acting in school plays, including Oliver Twist. So that's a nice touch. Nice touch. And then in the flashback to Hurley's mansion, you can see a portrait of a tranquil beach. This is definitely a harbinger. And we've got Daniel Dae Kim, Jin, appears again for the first time since Further Instructions, ending a 6-episode absence. No reason is given for his absence, unlike other long runs of non-appearances for people. So, yeah, I think they felt bad and they really wanted to give Jin, his time to shine here. So it's a welcome return. Then, how do I say her name?
Keely.
Keely. Thank you. I was going to say Kylie. Keely. Keely Sanchez. Nikki, our favorite character. And Rodrigo Santoro, Paulo, return after both missing the previous 3 episodes. So,
and we did
another really welcome return. Actually, they're a little more bearable this episode.
That's because they're only in it looking for something behind the powdered milk, and then he pulls her away when Hurley wants help on nobody flipping over man, and that's all we see of them.
Hey, yeah, we see Nikki just full on giving out hugs, though. She's hugging Kate. She's hugging Sawyer they come back. She's right in the middle of the action.
Oh,
yeah. Boy. That part kind of annoyed me. Like, oh, she's she has a relationship with Kate all of a sudden. Okay.
So does all the other red shirt Islanders, too. Oh,
all right. Well, this here is day 76 on the island. And this is the part where we normally would go through previously on Lost. But we don't need to do that. There was no previously on Lost. Kind of a cold open here.
We open up.
I love a good cold open.
That's like a compliment. It's like a man who needs no introduction, Hurley.
That's right. This is Hurley. This is it. Cold opens to Hurley playing Shambhala or listening to the song and walking out with a toolbox and getting his dad's screwdrivers all set up in a perfect row for dad to come help him fix the car. So, with that being said, let's talk about this episode. All right. Let's talk about Hurley's flashbacks first. There's so much that went on with this.
What a flashback.
Well, first off, we got Cheech. We got Cheech on Lost.
We cannot beat that. We did. And he had a good line. Having hope is never stupid.
And he seems so likable.
Yeah, he's great. I looked up a random interview from a long time ago of it's on IGN with Cheech Marin, and he said when they were asking him about being on the show, and he's like, you know what? That sounds like a lot of fun. It's in Hawaii, right? I can do that. I was like, it's in Hawaii? Sounds great.
Why not?
And he said he really enjoyed the role. You know what? Hurley's parents, his mom and his dad, like, not really introduced heavily early on, like some of the other parents, some of the other side characters. But I would say, like, they end up being like two of the best side characters on Lost. And flashback. And they're not really just flashback characters because we get a good amount of them in season 4 in the flash forward, and then season 5 in the present time of season 5. Like, they become like active characters in the show, not just flashback characters, which is pretty cool.
Right. Oh, I agree. And we have everybody's got daddy issues on this show. So, his dad, of course, we know the open is not really Hurley starting off. It's Hurley at Libby's grave, and we'll kind of talk about that when we get to the island stuff. But you have this young Hurley who we kind of get this feeling that when his dad comes and leaves and says, "I got a job in Vegas," that this isn't the first time he's done this to Hurley. I just got this feeling this is not the first time that he's kind of ran out and said he has something to do and he leaves his son. I mean, but this is definitely the longest of those absences. What did you guys think? I mean, did it seem like this is something that's happened before? Or,
yeah, I think they definitely made it seem that way. Definitely from his mom's perspective, you could kind of see her looking out the window as to what was happening. You knew that she kind of knew, you know, he was going to be gone for a while. But yeah, that would be my guess too, that he's left before. But yeah, definitely not as long as he did, since he was gone for what, 17 years this time. But
yeah,
seems like he doesn't really stay with them for too long.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure if he'd gone before. I hadn't thought of that, but I guess probably so. But this is kind of the, you know, going out for milk, son, and, you know, sadly he never comes back. I mean, he basically abandons them. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's even really a divorce or anything. He just leaves. So yeah, I mean, it's sad. It's rough. It's an interesting way to start the episode. This is such a classic flashback, and I love it. And I just wanted to say, you know, just to get this out of the way at the beginning, this episode wasn't like that well received at first. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the fans loved it, but like some of the reviews, I mean, I remember got, you know, 7.7, you know, whatever. It was not always thought of so highly, and some people were like, this flashback, like, what's going on? Like, but yeah, there's a ridiculous scene that we're going to talk about, and it's weird, but it like is so memorable too. And the emotion and the stuff that they start in this episode is really paid off throughout the whole series. This relationship with Hurley's dad is really important, and it's unique to some of the other. There's a lot of daddy issues that are huge failures. This one is eventually going to be a really enjoyable success.
I agree. And you know, of course, one of the lines we'll hear later in the movie, when his dad leaves, he gives him this candy bar. It's not, obviously not an Apollo candy bar or anything. When his dad first sees Hurley, and he says, "Oh, your mom was right about those candy bars."
Yeah.
That's the only thing I'll say for this episode. As I said, it's a great episode. But if there was a complaint, if there was a complaint, it would have to be that people are just continuously horrible to Hugo about his weight. Like, it is, they are just like his mom, his dad, they're just brutal. Like,
he likes chicken.
I believe the word is microaggressions. That, man, people just constantly between Sawyer calling him Jumbotron and like,
yeah,
poor Hurley's weight is always the subject of jokes. I said, if there was a complaint, that would be what it was. But
yeah. So his dad leaves, and the next time we get a flashback, Hurley, of course, we know has won the lottery. And then Trisha Tanaka's talking to him about, you know, buying Mr. Cluck's Chicken Shack, and she says, "So you must be feeling really, you know, pretty good. You must be feeling pretty good." Like, he said, "Well, actually, my uncle Tito died. My mom's house burned. And he just starts going through this list, and she just looks at him like, "All right, back to you. Let's get a shot of what's going on inside the Chicken Shack." I mean, he just starts to listen to every bad thing that's happened in his life, man. It was great. I loved it. Oh, and then in his whole answer for, "Well, why'd you buy the Chicken Shack?" I like chicken. Buy the Chicken Shack. So
yeah, I mean, that was a funny scene, and you you definitely don't expect what is about to happen to happen.
No.
But we also got to mention old Randy Nations is back. the irony of he's Hurley now being his boss, and you know, he seems like maybe he's mellowed out a little since the last couple times we've seen him. I guess, did we ever establish in the timeline the box company with Locke, was that after the Chicken Shack it gets hit by the meteor that he goes to work for before?
I think it's before.
Because it seems like it's right before Locke goes on his walkabout, which is what leads him to the island. So it kind of seemed to me like it might be after this.
Okay.
And if it is, then, you know, then he goes back to being a jerk, I guess. He's probably being nice to Hurley here since Hurley's the owner, sucking up a little. But, yeah, this is a different Randy than we've seen every other time.
Yeah. Any thoughts from you, Corey?
Sorry, I was having a little technical issue there. Can you guys hear me fine?
Everybody? Yeah. Sounds
okay? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
I think I fixed it. All right. I was like so nervous. I don't want microphone issues with this monumental episode. This is important.
I know.
Sweating bullets over here. Okay. So now that I'm back on track, you know, I have to agree with Steven. I do think like they give the candy bar thing, like, that's, do we really need an origin story for why Hurley became fat? Like, is that necessary?
No.
I mean, it is kind of like funny that he's like, oh, you still have the candy bar? But like, I don't know. That part probably not necessary. I do love the way this is set up with the young Hurley and the car and the broken carburetor and like what is going to kind of happen in the future here. And yeah, I mean, it's a very endearing story. And this episode, you just can't help but feeling good when you watch this. But yeah, going forward to, you were talking about Randy Nations and stuff, like, I just hate Randy. It's very confusing. He's just a hateable character.
By the way, I hate Hurley's best friend too, because I forgot to add to his list of bad luck. His best friend ran off with his girlfriend.
Oh yeah.
Now we knew that he had a falling out with Johnny, but did we know that Johnny ran off with Starla? Or was this the first time we got this info? I can't remember.
This is the first time you get the info that he ran off with her.
Because we knew they had a falling out from Everybody Hates You.
Okay, so here's one thing I can never get, and I guess these two episodes connect. Everybody Hates Hugo in this one. I never did understand, did the reason Johnny hate Hurley is because Hurley didn't tell him that he had won the lottery? Was that the hate?
I mean, I think that's part of it. You don't tell the guy, then you run, then you lied to him all day. The way he found out was just not good. And then,
okay,
you know, I think people get jealous. I mean, if your friend gets $114 million, like, it's going to be hard to look at them the same way, jealousy or,
yeah,
you know, you just feel like that guy is just in a different whatever than, you know, class or level or whatever it is. Like, you, unfortunately, their friendship didn't last through that. I think that I'm sure a lot of people have issues with friendship after they win the lottery. And
right.
Unfortunate for Hurley, Johnny.
I know I always expected to find out more about their friendship and what happened. That was another one of those things. I kept thinking that would come back at some point, and it never did. And getting way ahead of ourselves, but for season 6, I remember there was some casting news, and it was one of the guys who ended up being one of the Temple others. His name's John Hawks, I believe. But I always remember thinking that he looked like DJ Qualls. So when they hired this guy for the show, I thought for sure, okay, this is going to be future Johnny. It's coming back. We're going to get more of it. And it wasn't that at all. I was completely wrong. But I remember I was always waiting for more to this story, and we never got it because it never quite added up to me either.
Hey, we could always have like a Netflix 6-episode spinoff of the Johnny Hurley story. I mean, yeah. I'd watch it.
I would for sure.
So I think we should talk about the main character of this episode, the title character, Trisha Tanaka.
She's dead.
She's the star. I mean, do you guys think is Trisha a good journalist or a good news reporter? I'm not sure. She's pretty serious.
I think she's a misunderstood journalist. And then I think she got stuffed with a story that like this guy is not giving me anything. His main answer was, well, actually I've had a lot of bad luck, or I bought a shack because I like chicken. I mean,
what is it? Yeah, I like chicken. That was his answer.
You can feel her frustration in that moment, you know, trying to do a little puff piece here. You can understand why she's frustrated.
With zero enthusiasm, he says, I like chicken. And come on, Hurley.
We've heard of Trisha Tanaka before, I'm pretty sure. Is this the first time we saw her?
I don't remember when we first heard about her, but I do know this is the first time we saw her.
Yeah, I know we've heard about that before.
We won't see her anymore.
I feel bad for Trisha.
We even knew that his restaurant got hit by a meteor, didn't we? Because didn't he say that before, that got hit by either a meteorite or an asteroid? I'm pretty sure he's told us that before, but I guess maybe we didn't expect to actually see it. I think it was when he was talking to Jack, when they were walking to the Black Rock or back from the Black Rock. I think he told him that his chicken shack got hit by a meteor, but
yeah,
we just didn't expect to actually see it.
It's kind of a difficult timeline, and I never heard that or noticed that before until we did this rewatch. I did pick it up at some point, so which was kind of cool because like this always threw me off, and it almost felt like is this a step too far? Is this like a little too ridiculous? Which I said earlier, and it is kind of ridiculous, but it is also just awesome, and it's like one of the flashback highlights of all time. One of the most unlucky things. It really gets the point across, and it makes us question like, is this really a curse? Is it really bad luck? I mean, what is going on here? I don't really know if I have the definitive answer on that.
I don't either.
But I love the way they address it with Hurley's dad in this episode. And, you know, sorry for Trisha. Randy.
Is anybody else disappointed Randy wasn't in the restaurant?
Yeah, a little disappointed.
I feel like he deserved to get hit by an asteroid.
What is the story with Randy? He must go. It is confusing because, like, he's Locke's boss. Like, right before Locke goes to the island, right?
See, I would think this episode could come. This scene could be before. And all right. So the only reason I can see it going both ways. So if it's before the Locke episode, timeline. It makes sense because, well, the chicken shack's blown up, so now he's got to find another job.
Yeah, so time has passed. We don't really know how much time has passed in this episode, I guess.
But it can't be a lot of time has passed. But at the same time, if you remember Trish Naka say, and he's living every employee's dream, and he talks about now the boss has become the employee. So Randy worked at the chicken shack, too, at the Mr. Cluck's, as a manager at one time, too.
Actually, the more I'm thinking about this, Hurley, this episode, was going to Australia to check out the numbers, and that happened. And didn't he crash in the oceanic flight on the way back from this trip to Australia? So this would have also been, I feel like there could be some timeline issues. Unless Randy was working two jobs at the same time, I feel like this would have been taking place right about the same time Locke was preparing for his walkabout.
We could just look over those things in this episode. Yeah. It's okay.
Well,
I need more Randy Nations information.
We need a Randy Nations spinoff. No, I think it has to do with, like, after the meteor or meteorite, whatever the heck it is, there could be some, like, you know, it could be a month there of time that goes by, you know, with the dad there. I mean, we're not exactly sure how long his dad is living there before Hurley leaves. And how long, it also depends on how long they were chilling in Australia. Was Hurley there for a while or was Locke there for quite a while? It's not really clear. So, yeah. Hey, whatever. It is so not important to this episode, though. You're right.
But you know what? But you know what is important to this episode is we have to get back to Hurley's house now.
Yeah.
When Hurley first walks in and sees his dad, and then the dinner conversation. Can we talk about an awkward dinner conversation for the win? I almost thought about making that the rating system. 1 out of 23 awkward dinner conversations. Oh. Where she covered up the Jesus ears.
I thought you were going to say 1 out of 23 pure gold hand-carved Jesus statues.
Oh. And when she covered up the Jesus ears, she said, "Hugo, I have needs." No!
She's a very passionate Carmen woman, Reyes, apparently.
She is one of the funniest characters on this show by far. Goodness. And she's great. Yeah, that scene there with Hurley plugging his ears, and you can really feel his pain. Things you don't want to hear your mom saying about your long lost dad.
I'm a very passionate woman. No.
Such a good scene.
I was going to say, this becomes like kind of an iconic location for the show.
Yes.
Because you have some really good scenes with this setup and with the golden Jesus in season 4 and season 5 of, you know, especially when Ben shows up there. So I think, does Hurley ever grab the statue as like a defense weapon? I think he does.
I thought he did in the fall, in the future seasons when,
yeah, when Ben shows up or something.
Right. So
weird to think that Ben Linus will be in this room, right?
Yes, it really is.
It is kind of weird, especially at this point in the series where Ben is, you know, we're getting to learn a lot more about him. But, oh, it's just such a great scene where, I mean, that's like one of her best moments, putting her
yes,
fingers on Jesus' ears. Little note here on this dinner really quickly. The Trons, apparently, you know, pretty good cooks here. Cooking up the classic burger and lasagna dinner
with a side of fries.
Have you guys never had this for dinner? Burger and lasagna. Maybe if I had leftovers.
And he said, Mrs. Tron, your services are no longer needed here. Consider your severance. You got to get away.
I looked up Bennigan's, which is where he said he got these people. This looks like it's a American restaurant chain. Irish and American, I'm not sure. That doesn't seem like that special to me. I don't know. Never been to Bennigan's.
I feel like
American Irish.
I feel like maybe that was just a place that Hurley frequented and said, "Hey, I like this food. I'm going to hire their cook to come cook for me." Kind of seems like a Hurley move.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be like this luxurious place, though. It's like not necessarily that great.
Like a Fuddruckers.
Yeah.
See, you said Bennigan's, and I kept thinking of the restaurant. I just had to look it up real quick. The restaurant Shenanigans from the movie Waiting with Ryan Reynolds. And for some reason, I thought they were connected because you said Irish. I'm like, ooh, Suspenders. I wonder if that's the same restaurant. It's not. Oh.
Or Hennigan's, the whiskey in Seinfeld that Kramer drinks.
That's true.
Gotch. It'll get you drunk with no smell.
But this dinner was so funny though, man. It was just, oh my goodness. You could just see Hugo getting madder and matter and matter throughout the whole dinner.
Well, one thing you got to consider is, imagine the kind of day this guy is having. His chicken restaurant, he almost got hit by a meteor. He comes home, and his dad, who's been gone for 17 years, shows up. I appreciate the fact that Hurley right away kind of sniffs out, hey, he's back for the money. You know, I appreciated the fact that he didn't just, believe he came back out of the goodness of his heart. Did anybody else think it was kind of weird, though, when she said that she got a hold of him because she was worried about it? How did she know how to get a hold of him? How did the mom know how to get a hold of him?
I'm assuming she has her resources. She's a passionate lady with needs, so maybe she knew where he was at.
I thought that was weird. I don't know.
She might have his cellar or something, I guess, and somehow tracked him down, maybe his work or something. And yeah, I mean, it is a good idea, though, because obviously, you know, Hugo is kind of losing it here, and his mom is at wit's end. Like, nothing she says is working, is helping. Like, right. She can't get through to him. And, you know, Hugo, you know, he's been institutionalized. He's had issues. He's out now, but, like, he's not doing well. And he does need that father figure to kind of help him out. And even though his dad, you know, has left and has been gone for 17 years, eventually they're going to be able to, you know, try to work through some of that. And so it's interesting to see these scenes. And, you know, Hugo, this is a great scene at the dinner. It's so awkward. It's so funny. And then he's like, you know what? I'm through with it. Like, I'm getting rid of the money, getting rid of the houses, the livestock. What livestock? I thought that was a funny thing. Is it a llama or something? You know, just to kind of jump ahead, like, this is something they're resistant to at first. And then I think David is his name. He goes, Dad, he's actually going to be willing to say, all right, well, you know, get rid of the money. Do what you need to do, because, like, if that is what's going to happen, like, your well-being is, like, what's most important. I mean, first he tries this other thing. I mean, do we want to talk about the psychic, another psychic appearance in Laws. This one was pretty funny, too.
Quick. Take off your clothes. Wait, what?
Come on. That's not... He starts cracking eggs.
He's like, all right, I'll give you $1,000 if you tell me right now my dad put up with me. Sir, the psychic arts cannot be bribed. $10,000, he put me up to it. Boo! I mean, oh my goodness. But yeah, this was great. You know, apart from the psychic, though, his dad's comment, though, when Hurley was packing up, said, look, I know it wasn't right, and look, I know, you know, I know I did come back for the money. He was honest. He said, I did it because I really wanted to help you. And he said, I just want you to know, he said, I'm always here if you need me. Just that comment, the open honesty of his dad was really good, I thought.
Yeah, it was touching. He says, you know, I'll be here when you get back. Yeah, maybe we'll take that trip to the Grand Canyon, you know, that we talked about eventually. And you have to kind of feel for, you know, both of them, this relationship. And Hurley, he looks like he's not in a good place. He looks pretty sad. He's like, okay, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. And he leaves, but he obviously is emotional. It, just the willingness there is nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice scene. And, you know, it is kind of heartbreaking when you think that, you know, this is, you know, he doesn't get back to his dad for a while, you know. So had, you know, obviously we know that he does eventually get back, and the dad was telling the truth here. He actually was waiting around for him. But, you know, if the events of season 4 don't happen, then, you know, they may never get to have their reunion, and, you know, Hurley leaves and doesn't come back. So I am glad that it worked out the way it did, and his dad was actually telling the truth here, and he did kind of stay in his life. So
it's good.
Yeah. This is a little happier than, like, say, Ana Lucia and her mom was, you know, last season, where it's like, I'll be there to pick you up, and she never made it. Pretty sad. Do you guys want to jump over to the island?
Let's go ahead and jump over to the island. Where do you want to start with the island?
I mean, let's start with the saddest part, I guess, right? Hurley, it starts Sawyer off.
Kate's, which one? Sawyer and Kate's relationship status? Or
I mean, that's never that sad, you know? Come on, mates.
Oh.
The grave site.
The scene of Libby's grave, that was, I kind of forgot that was a sad beginning to this kind of fun episode. But it, you know, it kind of brings you back to everything. It really hasn't been that long. You know, Libby died, and then they took that trek to go try to save Walt. And, you know, he's just getting back from that. And so, yeah, it's nice that he's still going and talking to Libby, and, you know, kind of fills us in. We didn't get a previously on Lost this episode, but he kind of gave us the previously on Lost in his little conversation with Libby here.
Yeah. It was very open, and I appreciate the openness of her. I guess the reason why I really like this episode is because throughout the whole first part of the season, it's been like an emotional roller coaster where you've been depressed the whole season. If you think about it, you've had the beatings of the main characters. You've had characters missing. You've had characters hurting. You've had characters dying. It's just been one thing after another. And Hurley's episode was meant to show you, hey, even though there's some bad things like Libby dying, you know, people make their own luck, and having hope is never stupid. And I think that's, you kind of needed that, because now that you see Sawyer and Kate coming back into the group, they're getting hope now to go after Jack. Hurley is kind of the momentum block in the season to push. It kind of brings me the Infinity War Endgame concept. At the Infinity War, you build up, but yet you have this depressing moment. And then partway through Endgame, you have kind of this depressing, you know, setup. But then all of a sudden, you have this one catalyst that kicks everything into an opposite direction. And that was, you know, spoiler if you have not seen Endgame, which is like 2 years old now. It's when Tony comes back to the Avengers and says, yeah, the reason, you know, so-and-so was a, you know, Hulk was a baby is because he didn't do this. You know, and that was the catalyst that was necessary. So I think that's what made this episode so good, in that you see the sadness when he's at Libby's grave, and he's describing the things that happened, but then he kind of shifts and says, you know what, man, people need a little bit of hope right now. And that's what happens. So anyways,
and I agree. I think the rest of the season is a lot more hopeful. Yeah, go ahead, Steven.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's kind of who Hurley is, though. You know, it's kind of a repeat of season one with the golf course. You know, Hurley's the one who kind of, you know, he's the voice of the people, you know, and he cares about, you know, Jack cares about keeping them alive. And, you know, Hurley cares about their well-being, you know. He's like, we need a little hope, you know. Things are looking pretty bad here. So that's why he created the golf course, and that's why he decided, hey, we got to get this van up and running. So,
yeah.
And I think I really enjoy getting an episode from Hurley's perspective like this. The pacing feels different. We've enjoyed these episodes. We had all these episodes of people locked as prisoners and they're suffering. And Hurley, I mean, just like any episode from his perspective, it's just a lot more fun and laid back, but like, there's also seriousness in there. There's emotion, and he's struggling with this curse and this thing that's hanging over him. But it's just like, it's kind of a different vibe. Like, usually we get episodes where Hurley is like, he's like the B plot of the episode, where he has like a little story. We get little tidbits, you know, like the golf course thing. But this, we get the whole episode from him. And I wish there were more, because I mean, you think about every Hurley episode we've discussed so far, they've all been really good. I mean, some of them were not as good, but like they're all really enjoyable. So they don't always pack the punch of like, you know, crazy reveals and stuff, but
they pack the punch you need at the moment in the show.
There's just a different vibe. I mean, even the music, like Hurley has his own goofy, weird theme of like running, like when he's running through the jungle,
chasing Vincent with the dead arm.
I love the music in this episode. We start off with the Halls of Shambhala, and then we get like this really emotional, like, lost song. I don't know the name of it, with the gravesite, and then the talk with Charlie, and then it goes into the goofy Hurley music. It's just like it, and we'll talk about the end later, another more great music, but it's just, it's the tone, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, of this episode is so much fun.
Yeah.
I love the way they approach the Charlie scene. You know, Charlie is all depressed. He's shaving there. And he's like, dude, Hurley's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, dude, I'm going to die. Desmond told me. This is what Hurley's still not hopeful yet. What does he say, Mike?
Death finds me, dude.
Yeah, he's like, it's my fault. You are going to die. It's my fault.
You're going to die. It's great. I love it. And then Vincent, of course, runs out of the jungle, and with the dead arm, with the key on the arm, and obviously he's going to chase it. So he chases in the wood. He comes across a van. But before he comes across the van, you had something in your notes, Corey, that was really funny about Sun and Jin, and I loved that scene because he's just getting frustrated.
Yeah, well, we get Sun is so very clearly saying, "Will you pass me the cereal?" Because she's trying to help Jin learn English, and Jin is just like, you know, he's like, "I don't want to do this at all." They're arguing. And then Nikki and Paulo, I don't know what it's something annoying about with the sugar or something like that.
Yep. It was so funny because when Sun said, "Will you please pass me a cereal?" Jin just starts talking in Korean. She says, I'm going to talk to you in English from now on. This is the only way you're going to learn." And he talks again in Korean. And you tell he's just getting so irritated. He's just so mad at Sun.
I was personally getting offended for Jin. Like, I know she was trying to help, but she was really just talking. She was treating him like a child, and I don't blame him for being annoyed. I know she was trying to help, but she was just very patronizing about it. I would have been annoyed too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is going to help Jin so much to be able to connect with other people. You know, it's hard when it's just only one person you can talk to.
Yeah.
Cool. I gotta say, one of the kind of fun parts about Lost is just how Jin's English does get better throughout the course of this show. Yes. And I mean, you gotta give credit to the actor, how he really made it believable, where he just slowly starts to learn English a little bit more. And obviously it's going to really pick up, you know, when there's a bit of a time jump in the future. But I love how it's just kind of a natural progression. I think they did a pretty good job with it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So we get this, which again, you know, we'll say this. People watching this at the time, some people loved this. Some people were like, a car? Like, why is this important? We need to know more about, you know, the important overarching plot. But it's just a great opening to Lost. We get the credit scene. And Hurley is, like, so juiced. Like, he's finally... I mean, this is always awesome when you can see somebody's like passion light up, and he's so passionate about this. He is something. He's like, because his dad's whole message was, you can make your own luck. Like, you can control your destiny. You can control your mindset, and you have to be positive. And it kind of was giving him, you know, a little light John Locke advice there. And Hurley is suddenly, this is like resonating with him. And he thinks everybody is going to be just as excited. Like, yes, we're going to start a car, guys. This is important. And everybody's like, nah, nah. They all step back. Except for Jin, who doesn't understand what the heck he's saying. He's just like, yeah, what?
And Harley's like, you have no idea what you signed up for, do you, buddy? Jin just smiles even bigger.
This definitely gave me SOS vibes, because the same thing happened to Jin that episode. Nobody else wanted to help, and Jin gets stuck helping because he doesn't understand what they're talking about. You'd think he would learn to just walk away when everybody else walks away. But I guess if he did, he would have missed out on some beer and a fun car ride.
Yeah.
You know what? I think Jin needed a break. You know, obviously him and Sun have a great relationship, but you know, everybody needs a little time, you know, off with their buddies every once in a while. This is like the guy's weekend here. He's going to go crack a few cold ones. Well, not cold ones. Crack a few lukewarm ones or hot jungle beers, whatever.
Stinky stale beers.
You know, it's in the shade. Maybe they're cool, but they're definitely old. And honestly, I had always, you kind of forget that this is the episode where Sawyer and Kate come back. If you haven't watched this for a while, you kind of forget how quickly they get Sawyer back into this. And, you know, so they bring Sawyer and Kate in, which I'm glad they just do this quickly. Like, we don't need like a whole another episode about them getting back. And it's good that Sawyer and Kate seem to be like on better terms, talking about Little House on the Prairie, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Sawyer drops a little nugget. He's like, oh, this is all I could watch in my trailer growing up, you know, kind of alluding to his kind of rough childhood there. But I really like the nice touch of him stepping on the dart that's all like disfigured from the hatch implosion, and just kind of reminds us
dart all the way out here in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
because they have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds us they don't know what happened to the hatch. They are unaware of anything that's going on here.
Yeah,
and Sawyer is not happy that the McCutcheon is completely gone. Where's PO'd.
Where's my stuff? Yeah. That was so funny, because he, let's see, and then what was it? Hurley went up to him first and gave him a hug because he was glad to see him, wasn't it?
No, he went to look for Hurley.
That's right.
Because he was the other person drinking the whiskey.
That's right.
And then
right.
he got the hug.
Right. Then he got the hug. Then he saw Jin. And Jin's, and they gave each other a hug too. And he said, "How are you, Jim?" And he said, "Jin, how are you, Jinbo?" And he said, and then Jin looked at him and said, "How are you?" Sorry, is one of the best lines in the world. What's he say, Corey?
Oh, somebody's hooked on phonics.
I loved it. It was so great.
Which, I'm not sure who's, I did hooked on phonics. I don't know if it, anybody younger generation than me, I don't think it's still around anymore, but you know, helps you read,
helps you sound
and
out
speak
words.
English, sound out words. You know,
you know, I thought it was funny because then Sawyer immediately goes into losing his alcohol, and Hurley said, "No, you're going to help us." Why? Because there's beer. he just manipulates Sawyer because there's beer.
Yes, perfect. He knows how to motivate Sawyer. I mean, Sawyer, I think Sawyer wants a beer would be like maybe probably the number one thing Sawyer could go for. Obviously, the whiskey wasn't that appealing to him because he still hadn't drank it all. You know, the beer, you know, he's a nice cold beer.
He looks at it and sees Roger's head hanging out in there. Like, oh, there's a head in here.
There's a head.
We'll get that later.
I love Sawyer. Yeah, Sawyer has no clue what's going on here. Like, Jin and Hurley had already found it, and it was like, not a big deal, I guess. Is this the head? A corpse's head back here? Like, what the? You said there was beer. You didn't give me the head warning, the skeletal head back here.
It's so funny.
I like that their assumption is Roger was on a beer run.
Love it.
Which we'll later get to know Roger, and we'll know that Roger was on a never-ending beer run, actually.
Yes. Oh my. So they get the van finally like flipped over, and next thing you see Sawyer crack open one of those beers. And he said, dude, are you really drinking that? He said, it's been here since before Rocky 3.
Maybe Rocky 2, he said.
Right. He said, stinky, stale. It's not bad. He said, hey, Skeletor seems to like it. And Hurley says, dude, that's respect the dead. That is Roger Workman. And so he looks at him and is like, you idiot. His name is Roger. He was a janitor. Just so many great lines, man.
It is great. I love that he's called Workman. Like, I mean, that's just, it seems like a very demoralizing title. And the fact that they have to print it on his jacket, too, is just, we just want everybody to know that you're a workman. Like, even though everyone already is aware of it, we need to really put it on there. insult you further.
And, you know, the fact that in the future, Sawyer turns Jack into a workman makes it even better.
Yes. Yes.
Or LeFleur.
I don't know who's the worst workman, because Jack really wasn't that great at it.
Oh.
It's obviously a lot of humor. It is just some great scenes. But it's just funny how much all of this stuff comes into play later on in the series. Whereas we go from the last episode, where I at least thought there was some pretty interesting stuff happening on the island that never amounted to anything. You know, the whole sheriff, the branding, all that stuff really amounted to nothing. And in this episode, it seems like just a fun, you know, lighthearted romp about getting a van started with a skeleton in it. Little do we know how much that's going to come into play later in this show.
Yeah,
no kidding. Like, this is like the total opposite of what we expected. I think, I don't know, you know, 10 years ago, I was into reading all these reviews. I'm pretty sure at the time, you don't even quote me on this, IGN gave this a bad review. I used to go to look at their reviews a lot. But, you know, the criticism was this has no relevance to the story at all. This is just filler, not important, waste of an episode. And I'm like, look at it now. Like, all this stuff comes back to play later on. So you guys don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'm understanding. Well, a lot of people were frustrated with the slow release of episodes. So I get it. And at the time, you didn't know that this was going to pay off later. But yeah. I mean, there's so many Easter eggs just in the trunk that, you know, you see there's these maps that Rudzinski's messing with later. What was with all the recycling? I don't know what that was about. The beer. I mean, we're going to have a scene with Roger Workman. We're going to see the preface to what happens here. The Dharma vans are going to become one of the main symbols of Lost as a show. The Dharma van immediately is just bam. Represents the show. I mean, I can't see a VW van without thinking about Lost, especially if yes. it's this color.
Absolutely.
Even if all this stuff didn't come back into play, which it does, but even if it didn't, I think this is a worthwhile episode. Absolutely. And I think we're something that we just are losing in TV today with all the 10-episode, 8-episode seasons, you know. A lot of great shows come out, but almost every, you know, Game of Thrones, Stranger, like everything's 8 to 10 episodes. And they don't give you enough just fun character episodes. So you say, even back then you said that you were reading articles where people were complaining about it, but sometimes the best TV, everything doesn't have to advance the story. Exactly. And even though this was advancing the story without us knowing it, it was still just a dang fun episode, even if it didn't advance the story at all.
The thing about Lost that is so cherished is the characters. And this is an example of great character work. You get some really good moments of Sawyer having a good time and also having, you know, the remorse over the struggles with him and Kate right now. We obviously get a lot of Hurley. We get some genuine. This is like, I think, a really big point where people become more endeared to Jin as a character. I mean, we've had a lot of growth over 2.5 seasons, but this is like a big memorable moment. And Charlie too, having fun and like taking on this, you know, kind of looming possible death. Like, this is a huge character moment that makes you care about these characters later on when some of them may or may not die. Like, this is huge. And I think sometimes you miss that in a 10-episode series where, oh, what's his name died? Well, I don't care. I didn't even know anything about him. I didn't share any fun moments. Like, this is a moment you remember. And there's a reason why this episode is on everybody's top 10 lists or a lot of people's, because you feel something. I mean, I was laughing, I was cheering while I was watching this. I was like, yes, like this, it brings something out in you, and it's great.
It does.
So,
you know what else is great? Sawyer's life lessons to Jen while they're drinking beer.
Yeah.
You just, so you hear him say stuff like, I'm sorry, you're right, those pants on me, Pat. He said, only three things a woman needs to hear. so then Hurley gets this idea to put the van near the edge, and then they all four just kind of look over, and Hurley's like, we're gonna jump start this thing. Which, all right, guys, look, you kind of have to suspend, you know, belief here. Honestly, if this van had been sitting in a jungle for 30 plus years, it's not starting with a jump start. It's not going to happen. That gasoline would have gummed up. This thing would not be starting.
All right. I am not a mechanic at all. But no. is there any chance, if there wasn't some Jacob intervention here, that this plan would have worked? Do you guys know, is there any chance that Hurley's move to pop the clutch, is there any chance that could have started a car? I don't know.
I mean, I've started a car like that before, but it wasn't with gas that had been sitting around for 20 years.
Right.
I guess it's not 20. I mean, actually, when did the purge happen? In the 90s. So
yeah, was it the 90s?
Or the late 80s?
Early 90s, yeah. I think, was when Roger
so this is
taken out.
10 plus years, you know. I still obviously don't think it would have worked. But I'm pretty confident that Jacob must have been on a stroll through the jungle one day and just touched this van as he went by. 87. Okay. So, you know.
So almost 20 years now, this gas has been sitting there and not being used. So, and then there was an awful lot of cobwebs and trees inside where the engine compartment was. But
I kind of thought it was fun too that twice this episode we saw they gave you just a little bit of hope. You know, is this going to start first with Hurley and his dad, and then the car doesn't start, and then we see Hurley get in just really thinking positive, and it doesn't start again. So they're really leading you to believe that this isn't going to work. You know, yeah. Hope is one thing, but these cars aren't starting.
Right. So, moving on just a little bit from this. So, they get it over the hill. Charlie hops in, shotgun with Hurley, which was a great moment for them. But I really think a lot of threes and two, Charlie did this because Charlie knew he was going to die. If this was how he was going to die, he was going to die. So I think there was a multi-layer to that, but he gets in, and then Jen and Sawyer push him and Charlie over the cliff. They go into the lock, and he said, there is no such thing as a bad curse. There is no curse. And he just, and the key flips on, and Shambhala comes on, and he just, and he's driving it, and the Sawyer's like, he got it. And they roll back and they pick them up, and they get in the van with Vincent, and all four of them and Vincent are just, you know, just having a good old time in the van, driving around in a circle, and just loving life.
And the way they did it too was really cool. It was like a handheld camera, like the way they filmed that scene felt kind of Wonder Years-ish, kind, yes, of, you know, the dog running down, and then the way they all got into the van, it had a different feel to it that was just nostalgic and fun, and the way they filmed it just was perfect.
Yeah, I have to say, I think when the car starts, to me, that's it's got to be like in the top five, you know, five moments of Lost. Like just, it's just such a feel good moment. Just so it, I mean, Charlie says when he gets in, you know, I'm right, shotgun, victory or death. And knowing that Charlie is doing this, and it's Hurley's idea, like, hey, you know, you're cursed, I'm cursed, you know, like maybe, you know, try to see if you're going to survive this and maybe you won't die. And this is actually, I think Charlie is key here because sometimes to get over your own issues, helping someone else out is one of the best ways to do that. So Hurley motivating Charlie is also helping Hurley himself, and they go in this together. And we've had a buildup of three seasons of this curse thing. And Hurley says, there is no curse. Closes his eyes, turns the ignition. And I have to say, the music. This is like the number one music moment. I said it earlier in Lost. The way that the car starts, but the first thing we hear is the tape deck playing the Halls of Shambhala. And it just kicks on. And it turns into this awesome montage. It's just like every single time it gets me. It's so cool.
Yes.
And you just see, you know, four dudes having a good time driving around with the windows down in a field on a beautiful island, a dog in there, you know, Vincent's living his best life. I mean, life doesn't get any better than that. Like, I was jealous. Yeah. I was like, dude, I want to be in that car right now. Like, that would be a dream. You know, they should build a little, recreation thing for people to go drive around a van on this field. Yes. In Hawaii.
I love it.
I would do it in an instant.
The definition of a joyride for sure.
Yes.
Yes. Literally a joyride. I have to say, Vincent being along for the ride of this episode, the great, great creative choice. It's just, this is Vincent's time to shine here.
You know? Absolutely.
Oh. A dog in a car with the wind, you know, blowing out, like, yeah, it's never happier. So, beautiful.
I love when Hurley is on a mission, and I don't think we really touch on when Hurley goes and slaps Charlie to get him back, you know, that was just such a great moment. I mean, he really slaps the heck out of him, but he did. He smacks him back into, you know, he's moping around feeling sorry for himself. And Hurley's just like, no, you're going to do this. You're going to do this with me. And then when Charlie comes around and says, I'm riding shotgun, it's such a great moment with those two.
It's good.
Yeah, you can't really beat it. The montage at the end is great, too. I love this this Shambhala remix. I think it's just called Shambhala on the Lost soundtrack.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we were in contact with the, you know, artists. Who is this song again?
I'm not sure.
Now I feel dumb for not. Three Dog Night. And we get permission to use the, like, do their own kind of version of the song. This Lost, you know, whatever. Is it a symphony or whatever? I don't know what the heck it is. Score. And it's such a cool song. And because you can feel the emotion of everything. You've got Hurley doing another joyride, just sitting out there in the car. Sun and Jin are feeling good. And you have a sad moment with Sawyer. He's got his, flat of beer, but he... no Kate. He's looking around. He doesn't see Kate, and it's just nice, you know. Not much Nikki and Paulo, so that's good too.
great episode. Great episode on that one. So then we kind of, at that ends, we kind of have a nice progression of story a little bit right at the end. A nice ending between Locke and Saeed and Kate meeting Danielle, and Kate pretty much saying, hey, you're going to take us to the others. And she said, now, why would I do that? And Kate said, because they have a girl there who helped us escape. Her name was Alex, and she's 16 years old. I'm pretty sure she's your daughter. So even though we had all this nice moments, we still had a little bit of story progression, which made it a good push in the episode.
Yeah, they put just enough of this in there, and I think it worked well, but I'm glad there wasn't too much more because it would distract away from the fun, loving episode we have going on here. And
right.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're setting this up. We're going to have, one of my favorite episodes is coming up It's one of those where I'm like, I'm not sure if it's like one of the best, but Enter 77, I'm super excited for that. And that's basically the story of this, these four, you know, characters, you know,
yeah,
our three losses plus Rousseau going out there. So we'll get a lot of them. And the other reminder of kind of the ongoing story that I liked earlier with Hurley was when Sawyer came and he asked, you know, about Jack. And, you know, it's kind of a sad moment in this happy episode where he says, yeah, they still have Jack. You know, we couldn't get him. And Hurley, you know, trying to stay positive, trying to think, you know, you make your own luck or whatever he's thinking. He's, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. You know, we'll get Jack. We'll get Jack back. It'll be all right. And that is a moment that you can kind of miss because it happens so quickly. But I really appreciated that little moment there.
It was good. It was good. Well, anything else before we kind of go to our in memoriam? All right.
No, I don't think so. It feels, you know, it almost feels weird to move beyond this episode, Mike, because we've been thinking about doing it for so long. But it's, well, I mean, it's just, what else do you say? It's so good. Yeah, we can just do another rerun. We'll just do another.
Right. In memoriam, we lost a great one today, and one that we know so much about. We lost Trisha Tanaka to a meteor hitting a Mr. Cluck's chicken shack.
One thing that has always irritated me about this episode was, I'm like, why does it have to be called Trisha Tanaka is Dead? Like, I mean, it's funny. I guess it makes it memorable, but it's probably also confusing to a lot of people.
She's dead.
Yeah, but why not call it, like, you know, Joyride or something like that? I guess that would be a lot more corny, but
It does kind of stick out as an episode title. Like, there's not another one really like that.
Yeah.
No.
Very unique. So I guess I'm glad it's like that, but it used to annoy me when I first watched it, but now it's, you know, it's aged. This episode has aged very well. I'll say that
it has.
I think we also have to in memoriam to Trisha Tanaka's cameraman.
He's gone too, and all the other employees in Mr. Cluck's chicken shack that were in there at the moment.
Well, you know, he died doing what he loved, which was getting crappy B-roll of the inside of a fast food joint. That's,
yes.
His passion.
Oh, my. Oh, let's rate this episode. So we're going to rate this episode 1 out of 23 Roger Workman beer runs. So 1 out of 23 Roger Workman beer runs. Guys, you don't mind. I'm just going to start it off. It's a perfect score for me. It's 23 out of 23. It wasn't going to be any different. It's never going to change. It's still going to be one of my favorite episodes of Lost of all time. It's just going to get a flat-out perfect score, 23 out of 23. It had everything. It moved the story along. It had a good moment. It had some sad moments. But 23 out of 23, Roger Workman beer runs. Corey, how about you?
Yes, good stuff. Well, you know, I knew that Mike had, like, threatened me if I didn't give this a certain score.
I scored it before I even watched the episode, honestly.
But, you know, I went into this with an open mind going, I'm not necessarily going to give this the highest score. I want to be fair. And the joy I had in watching this and, you know, the emotion that I felt, which is what Lost is so good at. There's mysteries, there's the, you know, there's all this stuff, but when it comes down to it, it's the character, and it's the characters and how you feel about the show when you're watching it. Yeah. And it was fantastic. So 23 out of 23, perfect. I get nothing bad to say about it. So
hey, all right. I have one convert. Steven, what about you?
Well, I think we gotta make it a sweep.
Hey,
23 out of 23.
Yeah,
Skeletor beer runs. it was just fun. Just a great episode, and we have Cheech. You can't take points off when you got Cheech in an episode. So
it was great. Good. I think that is our first unanimous sweep of an episode.
I think so too.
So, such a good one.
Who wrote this? Adam Horowitz. Credit to them, because I think, like I said, this episode wasn't as like greatly received at first, but it is one in the end because everybody loves this episode.
It's one of those episodes or movies before its time, kind of a thing.
I'm gonna send an email to Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, like, just so you know, we gave this a perfect score on our podcast. I thought you'd appreciate that.
That's so funny.
There may not be a bigger differential between two episodes and just how people look back on the last episode, Stranger in a Strange Land, followed up by this episode. It's talk about two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Oh, 100%.
Back to back. This has been a fun couple of episodes to talk about for sure.
Yes. Yes. All right, well, we're going to get into our ending discussion because I know we're going kind of long here, but we had to do it for this special episode. So, unanswered questions, not really any for this, except for how they got the car started with 17-year-old gas, but whatever. It doesn't matter. We do have a lot of stuff from Sawyer's name dictionary. So let me rifle through these.
We have a ton of names.
Yeah, for Hurley, we've got a few of them. We've got a very long. Is this a nickname? I mean, it is, but it's very long. The International House of Pancakes. not the nicest thing to call Hurley.
but the way he says it when he's talking to Jen, he says, International House of Pancakes. He just kind of points over at Hurley.
Yeah, I mean, that was great when Sawyer and Jin are obviously obviously drunk and are feeling it a little bit, and Hurley's over there praying. Yeah. What are you doing? Jumbotron, which I think we've heard before from Sawyer for Hurley as well. And then Snuffy also. And for Jin, we've got Jimbo. And Charlie, maybe the best one, Jiminy Cricket, which Charlie's reaction is great. He like shakes his head, but he's also like kind of like laughing at it himself. That's all right. You know that. They're putting up with Sawyer's nicknames a lot more because it's been a while since they've seen him. So it's still a little endearing. He also calls Charlie Munchkin and Oliver Twist. So it's kind of a theme there. On his height. Why didn't he just call him Mary or Little Hobbit? they didn't go that far to the meta stuff, I guess. Then for our good buddy Roger Workman, Skeletor, of course, as we mentioned. And he even has a nickname for the Dharma van. Oh, you found yourself a hippie car. Our freckle count is at 25 still. So, yeah, good nickname episode for Sawyer. Some pop culture connections. We've got Amarok, which it's kind of confusing here. Hurley's father's motorcycle seems to be a Yamaha, but it's missing letters. So it reads A-M-A-H, which is Ama, which is the name of a rock in Hong Kong. According to legend, a faithful wife waited loyally for her fisherman husband, not knowing he had drowned and was turned into a rock by the goddess of the sea. So definitely some lost, you know, themes there. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but, you know, a lot of people waiting for our losties to return from this flight. And
I'm not sure how faithful the wife of the fisherman we know was while waiting for him, but take my shot probably across the bow at Sun there.
She was probably very passionate and had needs too.
Yeah. That little legend doesn't really cross over to Sun. We've got Family Guy. So TV news reporter Trisha Tanaka is a reference to the reporter Trisha Takanawa. From the popular Fox sitcom cartoon Family Guy. And then I also read this. I did this a little, took this a little further. Apparently, the character in Family Guy is based on the on-scene reporter from Mad TV, who is played by Alex Borstein and is obsessed with David Bowie. So it's a reference to a reference to a reference. Yeah, reference inception going on there. Okay, so and we have Shambhala, the song playing both at the beginning of the show and on the 8-track in the VW bus is Shambhala by Three Dog Night. It was, or is it, isn't it the Halls of Shambhala? No, or is it just called Shambhala? It is just called Shambhala. I kept saying it wrong earlier. But in it's part of the lyrics, so it was, you know, whatever. It was released in 1973, and the lyrics say that everyone is lucky, everyone is so kind on the road to Shambhala. So, Shambhala Buddhism, Shambhala also represents for Buddhists the pure land and is believed to be a society in which all inhabitants are enlightened. So, another kind of a Dharma sounding crossover there too. Christianity. Hurley's mother wore a Christian cross around her neck. She also had Christian earrings, cross earrings, and the golden Jesus was all in one shot. I noticed that. And then the Dharma van has a rosary over the rearview mirror. It's intriguing. I didn't really know that Roger Workman seemed like a very faith leaning man. The solid gold Jesus, which Hurley's mom calls the Savior, was displayed on the dinner table, which we talked about. We've got Little House on the Prairie, which we mentioned as well. Sawyer, as a child, watched Little House on the Prairie, which was an American television series from 74 to 83. He specifically mentions character Laura Ingalls, and he refers to it simply as Little House, which I guess shows that he was a big fan. Pinocchio, Sawyer calls Charlie Jiminy Cricket, which is a character from the 1940 Disney film Pinocchio. Also, the expletive my seventh grade basketball coach used because he couldn't say anything else. He'd go, Jiminy Cricket, which I always
thought. I've heard that before.
Hooked on Phonics. Sawyer jokes that Jin is hooked on phonics, which is a line of educational materials which help children learn to read and write proper English. Oliver Twist. Sawyer called Charlie Oliver Twist, which is the name of a novel by Charles Dickens. He comes up quite a bit in Lost, specifically for Desmond. IHOP. Sawyer calls Hurley the International House of Pancakes. It's a chain of restaurants that serve breakfast food. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Sawyer refers to Roger as Skeletor, which is a character in this animated series. Sesame Street. Sawyer calls Hurley Snuffy. These all seem to be Sawyer's doing for the most part. I mean, so many. We joked about there were going to be a lot of pop culture connections last episode.
Oh, yeah.
They're here. Sesame Street. Sawyer calls Hurley Snuffy, the Snuffleupagus from this popular educational television series. Rocky 2 and Rocky 3. Hurley suggests the Dharma beer is older than Rocky 3, maybe Rocky 2, which came out in 79 and 82, respectively, which I guess it's not quite as old as those movies.
Right.
And then tarot cards. Lynn Karnoff read tarot cards for Hurley. The particular deck used is the medieval Scampany Tarot, of which both of the Six of Swords, the Tower, and the Death were briefly shown. The Death. Yeah, that kind of reminded me of the Grimm in Harry Potter. Then we have Highway 61 Revisited. Great album. Charlie wears a T-shirt for Bob Dylan's Highway 61 tour. In the song Highway 61 Revisited, Dylan uses the mysterious location of Highway 61 as a metaphor for all things dangerous and deadly. Yeah, that might be Dylan's best album, in my opinion. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. The music playing during the dinner in this flashback of Hurley is the first movement of the Sonata 331 by Mozart. Lady Tron. Hurley refers to Mrs. Tron as Lady Tron. Lady Tron is both
an electronica band, a song by Roxy Music, and a comic book character. Being a pop culture buff, Hurley might have been thinking any three of these things. I, to be honest, was not aware of any three of those things. I don't know if you guys were.
I wasn't.
Peanuts. Sawyer calls Hurley Blockhead.
I didn't have that one in the name dictionary.
Oh, wow. We better re-record this whole podcast.
We're good.
This was a popular put down in this strip from 1950 to 2000, usually directed toward the main character, Charlie Brown. I didn't catch that one either, honestly. Sawyer calls Hurley Jumbotron. A Jumbotron is a large screen used in sports stadiums. And then we've got the Wizard of Oz, last but not least. Sawyer refers to Charlie as a munchkin, and the munchkins were a race of little people in this movie. We all know the munchkins, so.
Y'all.
There we go. Wow. I'm impressed I made it through that.
Aren't you glad I gave all that to Corey?
Thank you. Steven's usually better at it, but, I did okay.
No, there was a lot of pop culture. I knew there was going to be a lot this round two in this episode. So, anyways.
Sawyer was on his game this episode.
Sawyer was definitely on his game for sure. Maybe it was all the beer he had.
You can tell Sawyer did watch a lot of TV as a kid in that trailer. And then as we theorized, he started reading a lot more when he was in prison. And now he's got the TV shows and the literary references. He's like the reference king.
Yes. So that was Trisha Tanaka is Dead. Steven, what are we watching next time on Lost?
All right. Next, we're going to be watching Enter 77, which we had the four-person team up at the end of the episode. So we're going to find out what happens from there.
And get some Brzezinski.
Yeah, I love this episode. We don't really get Brzezinski. We get, what's his face?
Mikhail.
Oh, I wonder why I was thinking Brzezinski for some reason.
He's in his cabin later, in the same cabin.
This is Brzezinski's, house.
We get Mikhail.
Yeah, great episode.
It's going to be great, guys.
Good Saeed episode. We haven't had a lot of Saeed this season, so this will be a good time for him to shine. And anytime there's an eye patch involved in anything, it's got to be good, right?
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, we're about an hour and 20 minutes in. So thank you so much for staying with us this long on this episode. And we're going to bolt out and we're going to fly down the hill and hope our car starts. And on the way down, good luck. Have a great couple weeks. And we'll see you next time on Previously on Lost. Peace out, everybody.
There is no curse. That's all I got. Bye-bye.
Good. Come on, Steven.
Have a good one.
There it is.